This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio into the final hour of the programme this morning. And as it's a Monday, it's time to look ahead to the DL debate tonight. And we're joined on the line, on Zoom indeed, by Brendan Devaney. Brendan, a very good morning to you.
How you doing? How you keeping, sir?
Very well indeed. Brendan, before we get into the preview of the show and reflect on what happened at the weekend, the GAA is all about people, and one of the good ones we lost at the weekend.
Yeah, I don't, it was a very emotional weekend for everyone, you know, connected to these unions, and, you know, Aidan McGlynn was such an integral part of that, you know, left us way too young, and such a sad day and sad time for particularly his wife, Cathy, you know, the McHugh family that she came from over Mount Charles there, and all the McGlynn clan, you know. But there was something, I suppose, heartwarming yesterday, down the way, you know, the crowd that was there for the service at the cathedral, and then, you know, obviously everybody that was friendly with Aidan, anybody he knew, you know, knew him, knew the man that he was. And it was a real honour for the club, you know, to be there at the park yesterday and to walk the coffin out to Cornwall. You know, it was a very powerful moment. And I guess we always get caught up in sport and, you know, there's a lot of passion behind it, but really what is behind it is people. And so yesterday was a really tough day for everybody. Our game was switched to Saturday night to accommodate that, and just your heart goes out, as I say, to Cathy and the families, and obviously his brother Gareth, you know, was involved in her management team, and Aidan was always in there on the group as well, and you know, we knew this day was coming, but nevertheless it was really tough, but at the same time I was really proud of the club and I suppose of the team, the way yeah. the way they came around the family and the occasion. Yeah. So. And then
the fact that so many people from so many clubs right across Donegal and further afield were there just shows the esteem and the love in which he was held.
Yeah, a huge man for sport, to say, you know, that Letterkenny AC and he was huge into everything, you know, the Premier League, and he was always a great man to see. And was ready to help out many, many things at the park, but say the last number of years, him and Gareth doing the stats, and the bond that you create with people there and the relationships, you know, ran through, and it was a tough day yesterday, but heartwarming the send off.
Brendan, it was a busy weekend for the GAA in Donegal. We've moved on to the next phase now in terms of the county championships and some very important games.
Yeah, don't, it was a big wrap up weekend right across all the championships. Yeah. You know, top of the pile, you know, Glen Swilly and St. Michael's, another big victory for them over Gidore away. Leave Connell and Kilcarb and straight into the quarter-final. So the prelims now, you have Gidore playing McCool, St. Junans, Ardraw, Dunlow, Downans, and Four Masters playing Killybeg. So some great ties in there, Donal, and of course the relegation playoffs, NLC, Glenfinlay, Rua, Clochaneely, and St. Noel's playoff for see who goes down to the intermediate level. So yeah, huge weekend of sport. Don't listen, the big teams coming through with some big victories, with a couple of rough ones in there. Don't be 2-7-6s in there, and a lot of people. I think I was looking just at Irish news there and Turgid affair. I seen put across it though. So yeah, we certainly have some issues in Donegal Club football around tactics, and it's all coming down to this rule change, I think, which we're looking across, waiting to see what happens, because I think if it's left to the powers, the coaching and the teams out there, we're dragging the game down badly. So I'm hoping, Donal, for some good games in those. And those final matches decide who gets into the quarterfinals and, of course, in the relegations. But tactics certainly are playing a huge part in the layout of games, and certainly not for the betterment of the entertainment, let's say, though.
Yeah. Well, yourself, Pádraig Kilfertaigh, Brendan Kilcoyne and Ryan Ferry of the Donegal News, I'm sure will give it your critical analysis on the DL debate tonight, and I'm sure the opinions won't be slow in coming onto the table when that's discussed this evening.
Yeah, it's a difficult one, you know. I think some of the teams there, you know, they might say, what do you want? They have to play it, I guess. But, you know, I think some of the bigger teams, you'd think, right, does there need more of an attack element to it, you know? And you have this balance between wanting to win championship games, but, you know, also trying to, you know, let the game go as well. So that balance in Act One definitely has gone more in the tactics side this last while, and you know, I'm seeing it from pitch side now, just how deep it gets in that. So listen, that the balancing act on, I suppose, that the tactics, they have to open up a bit. The only thing I think is going to help that is a rule change. But yeah, listen, the three lads will tease that out tonight, and you know, obviously we'll go into the intermediate and junior championships as well, and just see the movers and shakers there as well.
Colin McFadden on the show tonight as well, of course, All-Ireland winner, member of Jim McGuinness's team, a man who knows a thing or two about GAA.
Yeah, I caught up with Colin last week, so we had a brief chat, and I'm always angling in, Donald, here, listen, can we continue this conversation on the show on Highland? And listen, people obviously hear from Colin what an absolute legend he was in the seat and the backroom team. He obviously was at the Creasley game at the weekend too. So listen, be interesting to get his points of view on that as well. Always great to catch up with him.
That's the DL debate. It's on tonight, Brendan, just after the 7 o'clock news. And as I always say, it's the GAA programme for people who don't know they want to hear a GAA programme. It's always a really enjoyable listen. And as we say, the opinions will come forward. The chat will be good. And it'll be all holes barred. Thank you very much indeed, Brendan, for joining us this morning. We're thinking of you and everybody in the unit. Take care. That's Brendan Devaney there. DL debate. It's on tonight, directly after the 7 o'clock news, and it'll be a great listen as always. Just looking at one or two of your comments. Caller says, if you report a streetlight out to the ESB, I think they'll fix it themselves, as far as I'm aware. My understanding is that Donegal County Council are responsible for the maintenance of streetlights, and it's done on a basis of a contract which is administered by Donegal County Council, and at this moment that issue is out to tender, or they're coming to the end of a tender process. We're not sure exactly where we are in that process, but I know that the outgoing contract ended on August 16th. Caller says, coming from the new Aldi side, since the lights went into operation, it was much easier to get onto the roundabout. Before the lights, it was nearly impossible from that direction at busy times. And now, I think some of the conversation about Polestar roundabout is going to be dependent on what side you're hitting it from. I do know that there is a lot of belief out there that since the lights went up, it's become busier and harder from that Remelton Road side. And anecdotally, I hear if you're coming, as the caller said, from the new Aldi side, which I take to be the Neil T. Blaney Road, heading out from town there, that if you're going onto the roundabout coming from that direction, particularly during the evening rush hour, it's a lot easier. So it's going to depend on what angle you're hitting it. A caller says, well said, we spoke to Mark earlier. Well said, Mark, making total sense about the roundabout and the lights. I hope they're out for a week to see if it eases the traffic. And Mark, that comes from a very unbiased listener, your wee cousin, Rosie. Another caller says, referring to Mark, that man is spot on. I came in this morning from the Remelton Road and again from the Clanree. Normally I have to sit in traffic. This morning, no problem. Everyone giving way and being cautious. Best thing that ever happened. One thing for sure, lights in the middle shouldn't be there. Roundabouts not good enough, so says the caller. Another caller says, it's 2024 and people in Donegal are still having conversations on the mystery of trying to navigate roundabouts. Now, I think in fairness, caller, what I would say is what happened when the lights went in was there were some new lanes were developed, and it's that there's middle lanes, and in some of those middle lanes do have lights in the middle of the roundabout, and I think people are getting used to that, and it's you're hitting it trying to treat it as a normal roundabout, but it's a slightly different lane system. That's where there's a little bit of confusion. And I will again repeat, what didn't help was the fact that some of the lights were on. Now, they were green and possibly were permanently green, the lights sort of as you head in toward the Neil T. Blaney Road. But certainly the fact that some lights were on were, to say the least, distracting. Another caller says, Donald, don't people realise that they're not going to leave those lights off and go back to a standard roundabout? The money spent would be money down the drain, and they're not going to allow that to happen. So says a caller. This is the 9 till noon show. It is Monday, September the 9th, and today is Suicide Prevention Day. In a few moments, we'll be hearing from a representative of the HSE. But first, we're going to talk about a run that's coming up. The family of the late Jack Edgar from Carnhill are taking part in an epic run in Dublin this coming weekend to raise awareness about mental health and suicide. Jack passed away in December of 2022, and we're joined in studio this morning by a family friend of the Edgars, and that's Peter Roddy. Peter, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Peter, first and foremost, tell us about Jack.
Jack was a well-loved young man. He was well respected by his peers. Was into his sports and his mixed martial arts. Had a job, had a good circle of friends. Seemed to be enjoying life. Had a good support network at home. Just a lovely young man.
In terms of, and sadly we know Jack did pass away, and one of the things I suppose that everyone finds themselves asking is, were there signs, were there indications, was there some way that I could have known, was there something more we could have done? And that's one of the horrible legacies of this, is that those who are left behind are left asking questions that ultimately are very hard to answer.
Right, that's exactly it. There was no indication that this might happen. I think, like so many other families across the island of Ireland, you get a phone call one day, and it's a phone call that you don't want to hear. And out of the blue, it's too late. They ask the questions or get answers to the questions that you talked about. And that's part of why this Run to Dublin has happened, why there is such a huge undertaking, and why Tony and family are trying to raise awareness for suicide. You know, they've used the slogan, mindset reset, and they want to reset the thinking around suicide, and they want to have those conversations before it's too late.
Yeah. I mean, from the family point of view, from the point of view of friends, as you said, it does come as an awful shock, and it's taken the past couple of years to try and just begin processing that and sort of thinking through it. And this run is very much, I'm sure, part of the family's way of doing that as well. This is part of the family's coming to terms. Well, they'll never fully come to terms with it. Obviously, that is, I do apologize. That's the total wrong phrase to use probably. But in terms of the family's coming to some form of peace and acceptance with what's happened, this is going to be part of that process.
I think it's a huge part of it. Look, I can't speak from their perspective. I haven't lost somebody personally through suicide. So I can only really try to imagine what it is they're going through. But, you know, what Tony and Sabrina and the Edgar family have done is they have turned those, it goes back to this mindset reset, those negative, I suppose those tough days, post Jack's passing, they've turned those negative emotions into something positive, and they're trying to do something inspirational. The irony of the run, is that Tony wanted to raise as much awareness as he possibly could around suicide. So he wanted to take this huge undertaking on all by himself. And, you know, he's not an athlete by no means. He's not mind me saying that. And he set about running consistently over time. And then he had his injury struggles. He spent a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of money trying to overcome those injury struggles through different, physios and what have you. And it turned out he couldn't do it on his own. And what happened kind of symbolized what this is all about.
Yeah.
He was brave enough to ask for help, you know, when he was up against it. And when he asked for help, he got help in the form of his family. So what has happened since is, you know, his son, TJ, and his brothers, John, James, and Michael, have joined him on the run. They've gone in a camper van. Mm-hmm. They've broken a large problem and the smaller.
Yeah.
Manageable problems, and they've managed to do the 166-mile journey from Derry to Dublin in double quick time. And I think that kind of, you know, that symbolizes what this is all about right now. You know, this,
yeah.
You've got a huge problem. It might seem insurmountable, but if you're brave enough to ask for help,
yeah.
You know, and you're trying to change that mindset from, it being a weakness to ask for help to being, brave,
yeah.
They ask for help. You can overcome anything. You know, there's support networks out there, and it's about making people know that.
And obviously, there's two elements to the run. Obviously, it's a fundraiser, but it's also to raise awareness, and both, I'm sure, from the family's point of view, equally important.
Yep. Well, I want to, on that matter, it isn't actually a fundraiser. So, Tony and family have created locally and Derry a couple of fundraising events that they've had annually. Now they've jumping for our Jackson around June. And they've another fundraising and awareness event called The Killer Mile that they hold in the Derry Cemetery in around August. This is purely about awareness. This isn't about fundraising. This is about getting the message out there on the biggest stage possible. The Aviva Stadium is one of the biggest stadiums in Ireland, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got a huge audience there. There's an international match. Well, there was one took place on
Saturday.
On Saturday, right? Unfortunately. But there's one again on Tuesday. Yeah. And, you know, you're looking at a stadium full of people, and a match that's being broadcast nationally and, you know, throughout the world as well too. So a huge audience to try and get that message out there.
Yeah. From the family's point of view, important that it's been happening, important that they've been supporting each other, important that the message is getting out there. Hopefully the outcome of this is going to be that we'll see figures fall, we'll see people, as you said, more willing to reach out for help, more willing to have the conversation at the time the conversation needs to be had.
And that's it. Mindset reset. Let's break the taboo around suicide. Let's make it more normalised to talk about suicide so that these dark days don't come. There was, I mean, consistently over the last few years, there's between 700 and 800 people across the island of Ireland that take their lives through suicide. When you dig down on those numbers, you know, upwards of 70-odd% of those figures are males. Why is that? We don't know, but until we start opening the conversation and really digging in, we'll never find out. I think it's about mindset reset is about how we think about suicide in general. Let's change the thinking. Let's remove the taboos. Let's make it normal. They discuss their problems on a day-to-day basis so they don't manifest into something bigger. And equally for the person that might have suicidal thoughts, you know, let's show them that through these conversations, we can open networks of support where they might be able to change their despair or, you know, those feelings of isolation and pending doom, and the, you know, hope for tomorrow. Because in those moments, it's a struggle, I'm sure, for those people to see life beyond that day. But in actual fact, if you reach out, if you have the strength to reach out, you might find that, you know, there's a limitless life beyond that day, if you can get the right support.
Peter, listen, thank you very much indeed for coming in and speaking to us today. These are very important issues. And if these issues are in any way resonating with you, there's organizations like Lifeline, there's the Samaritans in the Republic, there's Pieta House. There are other organizations as well. Not to mention your local medical professionals, but please, if you're having any form of thoughts and if you find yourself in that dark space that you don't want to be in, please do reach out, because the most important message coming from this is that reset of the mindset that we have to get away from the, you know, I'm a male, and maybe sometimes males are the worst at reaching out and talking to people and reaching out. So please, if you're in a space like that, please do reach out. There is help there. Please do avail of it. We send our love, obviously, to the family, Peter, and thank you very much indeed.
Bye.
It's the Ninefold Noon Show on Highland Radio, and the HSC has launched a very important new initiative. It's Let's Talk About Suicide. It's online training, which is available to everyone who wants to learn more about this issue. We're joined on the programme this morning by Ciara Ray, who's a resource officer for suicide prevention with the HSC. Ciara, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Donal.
Ciara, this is an online initiative and an online resource for people who want to learn more about suicide prevention and more about discussion of and help in that whole area. Tell us how this new initiative works.
Well, Donal, Let's Talk About Suicide is, as you said, a new free online suicide prevention training programme. It's there for everyone over the age of 18 in the community of Donegal. And it can be accessed by going to hse.ie/letstalk. The purpose of the programme really is to develop skills to be able to keep others safe from suicide. And it's really about changing the narrative on suicide. And it's a call to action to our community to start the conversation around open conversations to help prevent people dying by suicide. What we know, Donal, is that those who are experiencing thoughts of suicide or have maybe experienced a suicide attempt in the past are not reaching out and seeking help, and they're therefore not getting the help that they need because of the fear of stigma surrounding suicide and mental health disorders. So what we are doing is on World Suicide Prevention Day and now at the beginning of Green Ribbon Month, we're encouraging everyone in our community in Donegal to take some time out and to complete the Let's Talk About Suicide training. So we're inviting people to do their part in reducing the stigma associated with speaking out openly about our mental health and suicide.
it's very important, I'm sure, from your point of view, that people involved in youth organisations, sporting organisations, groups where young people come together, perhaps particularly, but by no means exclusively, young men, that people involved in those groups would take this programme. But it goes beyond that, in your belief. Maybe we should all be equipped to have the conversation should the point come where that conversation is necessary.
Well, certainly, because any of us at any point in our life could come upon someone who is in difficulty, who may be distressed, and who may need support. The programme is specifically for anyone over the age of 18, but especially for anyone who's supporting a loved one, working with others, or particularly, like you said, in the DAA and other aspects involved in their community. So we feel it's really important that people feel prepared to have these conversations whenever they arise. What we do know is that when people have thoughts of suicide, they don't truly want to die. They may be struggling with massive amount of mental and emotional pain and anguish that has been going on for a long period of time. And they will give us signals and they will share some aspects of that pain. So they will offer us these opportunities to respond to their words and actions. However, without education and awareness, we may miss, dismiss or avoid these signs. We may feel fear. We may feel that we aren't expert enough to be able to respond. So that's where the Let's Talk About Suicide comes in. It can help us build confidence in approaching and engaging with someone who's in distress. It can give us the confidence to ask the question directly, but with empathy, understanding and compassion. And it can give us the understanding of the importance to keep them safe and connect them with resources and supports and services. Doing this training could help save a life.
A large part of this is going to be language, and the language we use in these conversations, both with people that perhaps have suicidal ideations, but also the language we use in our general conversation, and I suppose from our point of view, the language we use in the media can be very important as well.
That's correct. And I suppose it's very important that the language that we use is destigmatizing, and that we approach a person who is speaking openly about suicidal thoughts in a non-judgmental way. It may take them a lot of time to open up and to have these conversations. So we want to recognize the importance of listening to them and responding to them with empathy and understanding.
As you say, this Let's Talk About Suicide, it's available online. People can go on. What's actually involved when you take that course online?
Well, it's very simple to enrol and register. Just simply go to the hse.ie/letstalk, and you'll see there's an option to register for the training program. It's only 60 minutes long. So we're asking people to take 1 hour out of their lives over the next week or two to complete the training programme. It's important to say too that if you don't have an hour, there is an option on the training programme to pause and recommence the programme, so you can pick up where you left off if you decide to do that, and you can work at your own pace. The material used within the programme is a mix of guided online content. So there are videos and there are interactive questions. What we would recommend is that anyone who's been recently bereaved by suicide to wait 12 months before engaging in this type of suicide prevention training. The program itself will help develop your skills to keep others safe from suicide. And it does this by helping you recognize the signs that somebody may be thinking about suicide, whether they be signs physically, mentally, behaviourally, or in terms of cues that they give us in terms of the conversations we have with them in day-to-day life, and also to be aware of the life stressors that some people may have going on. And through this process, we can then confidently engage and speak openly about suicide with the person and ask a question if need be.
We're speaking to Ciara Ray, who's Resource Officer for Suicide Prevention with the HSC. Ciara, it's a very important initiative, and thank you for sharing the details with us this morning. Are there any other elements that you want to raise about this? Anything else you want to say to us?
Well, it's important, I suppose, to practice self-care in the aftermath of having a conversation with somebody who may have thoughts of suicide. And if you do, or if you're worried about yourself or anyone else, it's important to get help as soon as possible. The first port of call is always your GP. There's also a number of helpline numbers that you can ring that are 24/7, so they're 24 hours a day. They include Samaritans. They can be contacted at 116123 or Pieta at 1800-247-247. Childline is also available at 1800-66-6666 or text 50101. If you prefer text, you can text about it to a free text service day and night at 50808. And if you want to find out more about information on mental health supports in your area, go to yourmentalhealth.ie. So it is important, if you are worried about yourself or someone else, that you get help as soon as possible. If it is a mental health crisis, it's important to go straight to your local emergency department, in this case, Letterkenny University Hospital.
And just to conclude, Ciara, if people want to enrol, go to hsc.ie/letstalk and all the details are there.
That's it, Donal.
Ciara, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning.
Thank you, Donal.
And that was Ciara there speaking to us tomorrow, which is Tuesday, September the 10th, is World Suicide Prevention Day, and the HSC reminding us that the global call to action for World Suicide Prevention Day is to change the narrative and start the conversation. And as Ciara said there, the aim is to inspire individuals, communities, organisations and governments to engage in open and honest discussions about suicide, and by initiating those vital conversations we can break down barriers, raise awareness and create better cultures of understanding and support. And when we were speaking there beforehand to Peter about the family of Jack and their experience in Carnhill, and they went on that awareness raising run with the theme of mindset reset, and the idea being that we all maybe need to change our mindset, and we all need to change the way we think and the way we reach out to people. And if there's one really important message coming from both what Peter was saying and also coming from what Ciara was saying to us there on the programme as well, it's that conversation is of the essence. Conversation, communication, and reaching out. And very often we're told that there's an old cliche, a problem shared is a problem halved, but a conversation started is a conversation that started. And very often what people need more than anything is just to unload some of the burden that's on them and some of the burden they feel they're caught up in. And the more we can do, I suppose, to encourage that, the better. So tomorrow, as we said, tomorrow is World Suicide Prevention Day. And I think it's really important that all of us give this some thought. And if we're involved in any way with communication with people, and indeed whatever we do, as Ciara said in that piece there, no harm maybe to do that free online presentation. You can go to nosp.ie/training, and that will bring you to the online course, and that is the course that Ciara was speaking to us there. You're listening to the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. There are calls for a rental court to be established in this country to protect renters and landlords. That's according to the Society of Chartered Surveyors in Ireland, who are calling on the government in its pre-budget submission to establish a dedicated body which could deal with rental disputes. The SCSI says it wants to see tenants and landlords protected. Now we're joined online by Gerard O'Toole, who's a Westport-based estate agent, and indeed he's the Vice President of the Society of Chartered Surveyors Ireland. Gerard, you're very welcome to the programme.
Morning, Greg.
Gerard, how important is it that we have this arbitration system to deal with issues between renters and landlords? Because we hear so much talk about landlords leaving the system, and one of the reasons we're told is that they can have problems with renters, and it can go beyond the issue of money or whatever, but they find that they cannot keep up renting because of trouble they're having. And that's an issue, it seems, could be resolved in this way.
Yeah, that's precisely the point. And the scale of the issue is immense. Just to, from the start, put it into context. Last year, there were about 10,000 disputes referred to the Residential Tenancies Board. That's about a 33% increase from the year before. So by any measure, it's significant. The current system is overly bureaucratic and too complex. It simply takes too long for either landlords or tenants who feel aggrieved to get their dispute heard. In terms of time lengths, the minimum time length on average is about 9.3 weeks for mediation. That extends to about 22 weeks for adjudication and actually rises to about 29 weeks for a full tribunal hearing. So if somebody is got a tenant who won't leave the property or pay the rent, or possibly a tenant is looking to get their deposit back, which the landlord is holding unlawfully, you're looking at possibly 6 months for that to be resolved. That's unacceptable.
What model would you see this court following? And we're using the word court loosely, whether it would have legal standing or whatever would need to be fleshed out in further discussion, I'm sure. But what would its form be? What would the arbitration be in terms of, would there be a judge? Would it be a solicitor? Would it be a barrister? How would you foresee this working on a day-to-day basis?
Well, it would have to be put on a statutory footing. So as part of our pre-budget submission, we're calling for a residential tenancies court to be set up and properly resourced and funded. We're also calling for a new statute to be put on to reform the current system, which is within the 2004 Act. That's now 10 years old. We believe is out of date. Listen, the exact mechanics of it, Greg, would need to be teased out. But I think the important message we're trying to convey is the current system that handles these through the Residential Tenancy Board is simply too outdated. Its current interim manager has actually agreed that and said as such publicly in July. So whether it's a court-appointed court advisor, barristers, whatever the case is, somebody with the appropriate skills and resources that are dedicated to listening to and disputing or adjudicating on civil disputes, importantly within a 3 month statutory footing. I think that's critical.
Yeah. And in terms of the Residential Tenancies Board, not all landlords are registered with them. There are a number of landlords that aren't. That would be an issue, which then presumably means if they're not registered with the RTB, they're not taking part in RTB arbitration, and that's creating another problem. This, I take it, would be a model that would have to hold for everybody, whether RTB registered or not.
Yeah, well, ultimately, if a tenancy isn't registered, the RTB or relevant authorities don't know about that. That's part of the issue that I think the RTB are looking for additional resources. And ultimately, this is an IT issue. Their infrastructure at the moment, as I understand it, simply can't deal with the scale of the amount of tenancies. And they are looking for additional funding. I believe they're working on a new IT system that will capture as much data as possible, and to also, pull landlords aside that aren't registered. But every tenancy in the country needs to be registered with the RTB. Many of them, unfortunately, aren't.
What is the reason for that? Is it that it suits both landlord and tenant to do it privately? Is it for tax purposes? Is there a myriad of reasons? Or can you sort of say, and I know it's not your purview necessarily to comment on these matters, but it does appear to be germane to this conversation that when you have a quantity of tenancies that aren't registered, then when you're talking about bringing in a court to go along with side the RTB, something is going to have to be done to actually bring those two together.
Yeah, I suspect there's a host of issues. I mean, it's a dirty word, but there's a black market in most economies. And I suspect it may be a convenient arrangement for some landlords and tenants to keep their tenancy agreement, whether it's informal or informal, outside the control of the RTB. From a landlord's perspective as well, bearing in mind a lot of the country is now covered by rent pressure zones, where if a tenancy changes or it's reviewed annually in terms of rents, irrespective of what the market rent is, it's capped at 2% per annum. So a tenancy that's unregulated, that sits outside of that, possibly allows the landlord further discretion to increase that rent.
In terms of the statutory footing you want this court to be under, that would mean a decision made by this rental court would be binding on both parties. Presumably then, if they wish to challenge, they're going to have to go into the mainstream legal system.
Yeah, again, the exact details of that, Gregor, to be found out. I think in our message today, it's essentially recognising that the current system is just no longer fit for purpose. Ultimately, the objective here is about keeping more landlords in the system. We've got a housing crisis, both for properties to purchase and to rent. And at the moment, lots of private landlords are exiting the market. Many of them, I suspect, were accidental landlords, got caught in negative equity and decided to keep their property rented while values have risen. Many of them then have now decided to sell. And that's positive in that it presents an opportunity for somebody to buy a house in a poorly supplied market. But for renters, it's driving down supply and ultimately it's increasing costs.
Given the gap between what used to be, there would have been a time when what we'll call, for the sake of argument, a middle-class couple earning average industrial wage or slightly above it, as the case may be, would have been able to reasonably expect, when bringing both their wages together, to get a mortgage. These days, someone in that situation would be in a very different situation. It's going to be very, very different. Are we coming to the point where we will need to accept that there's going to be a higher proportion of renters than there previously would have been? There'll be a section of people who realistically will not be able to own a home, and the whole rental market and the way it's managed and structured will need to be rethunk, because we're moving into what effectively is a new dispensation in terms of the rental market. It's going to become the norm for more and more people.
I think that's probably fair, Greg, and that's certainly the evidence over the last couple of years. Ireland historically had a very high rate of home ownership, and that's fallen steadily over the last number of years. Why? I suspect largely to do with affordability. That affordability gap is growing year on year. What does that mean? The reasonable costs of your net income to service a mortgage is just too high. Wage costs have not kept pace with the property market, and we've seen just this year alone, the property prices, according to the CSO latest publication data, has increased by 8.6% over the last year. This is a supply-demand imbalance. Our objective really is about increasing that supply across the market, both for new homes and rented homes. And really, that's what these incentives and this data we're publishing today is really all about.
And I suppose the key question there then is, given issues in the market, both in terms of purchase and rental, are we building houses fast enough? We've seen parties, both in government and opposition, publish their housing plans in recent weeks. And I'm sure you're looking at all the plans in detail. I'm not going to ask you to comment on any political parties' housing plans. But I mean, obviously, I'm sure SCSI would agree with others that this is sort of, you know, the biggest challenge at this point in time is going to be building more houses and sort of reaching the target levels, you know, if we're going to be addressing these supply issues.
That's exactly it. That's ultimately the objective. We want more supply in the marketplace, and we're not getting that. Certainly it's increased. There's been huge focus on more housing supply, lots of government initiatives, lots of money being spent. So the large government plan published 2 years ago called Housing for All suggested that we needed to build about 33,000 houses a year. Based on the CSO population projections, I think a more accurate estimate of that is now 50,000. This year, we'll probably build something like 31, maybe 33,000 houses a year. So we can see that ongoing gap in terms of where we need to get to. It's a very complex problem, and there's no one quick fix to it. There simply isn't. We've been grappling with this for a long, long time, and there's a myriad of issues that impact on it, and they all need untangling.
A caller is saying RTB is another money-making racket and does nothing for the landlord, that's for sure. I won't ask you to comment directly on that, but from what you're saying, it would appear that at the very least there will need to be some restructuring of the RTB if it's going to be made fit for purpose to deal with this whole new situation, because the way you're speaking about such a court, the RTB, the Residential Tenancies Board, could find itself smack in the middle of dealing with and organising all this, and it will need some a restructuring and a modernisation to make sure it's fit for purpose if that's to go ahead.
Yeah, well, this is the first time we've called for this. I think certainly landlords recognise the challenges and delays of having disputes dealt with. I suspect increasingly tenants recognise that. So for both sides, it needs to be properly adjudicated in a system that is fit for purpose, that is put on a statutory footing, and is suitably resourced. Again, ultimately, the objective is about an even playing ground and more supply coming into the market. If the current system prevents people, private small landlords that might own one or two houses, which are the backbone of private residential tenancies, if they're continuing to exit the market in the numbers that they are, it's simply diminishing supply. It's not being brought in elsewhere, and it's just driving up costs.
And that's an important one, because sometimes I wonder, are we putting so much emphasis on institutional vulture funds buying up loads of properties, renting them out, that we focus so much on that we lose sight of the amount of 1, 2, 3 home-owning landlords who are very, very small, and maybe they're, as you say, at the backbone of the system, but they're the ones we talk about the least.
Yeah, I mean, I think the so-called vulture funds, these just corporate investors, they make up a relatively small percentage of the overall housing stock, probably attract a lot of media attention, but certainly in provincial Ireland, where I work across Connacht and Ulster, there is no institutional, there are no corporate investors per se. It's the mom and pops. It's the small private individuals that, as I said, have become accidental landlords, and that they were caught in negative equity or had the wherewithal and resources to invest in a small number of properties. It is these ones, Greg, that are leaving the market in the type of numbers that we need to prevent.
Gerard O'Toole, Vice President of the Society of Chartered Surveyors of Ireland, SCSI, thanks very much indeed for speaking to us this morning and giving us impact on that. That a call for a rental court to be developed, and the idea would be that that rental court would adjudicate in disputes between landlords and tenants, and we would get to a situation where it would be binding, and then we would move it on from there. But that's certainly an interesting perspective coming to us from the SCSI. I'm sure we'll be hearing more and more about that as we head toward the dreaded general election, whenever it's going to be. Still widespread belief, I think, right across the country that the election is going to be in November. Simon Harris, the Taoiseach, still absolutely insisting that the election is not going to be in November. It is going to be in March of next year. So we will see what happens. I'm still keeping the middle of November free as far as my calendar is concerned, just in case. Before we go, I'm sad to read, looking at the Donegal News this morning, one of the stories inside, popular craft shop in the heart of Dunfanaghy to close. We've had so many of these stories over the past while. After many years, McAuliffe's craft shop will close permanently in the autumn. It's located in the heart of Dunfanaghy. The family-run business spans three generations. They took to social media to make the announcement recently. The spokesperson just said Anne is retiring after 40 fulfilling years. Connor is moving on to pursue new opportunities outside of the shop. We put significant thought and effort into finding a way for the business to continue in some capacity. However, despite our best efforts, this was not achievable. The staff expressed deep gratitude to their loyal customers and supportive suppliers. And I think it's always sad to see a story like that develop, where we have a local shop that's been part of a community closing. And it's a story we are hearing all too much in this day and age. Let's take a look at just some closing comments before we go and leave the stage open for John Breslin. Pedestrian crossing at the bank corner in Ballybofey should be removed. It's an accident waiting to happen, especially for cars coming from Glenfinn Street. The reason why the Remelton Road has such congestion is because of the two smaller roundabouts and feeder traffic from them heading toward the Polestar. I can actually understand where you're saying that. And it's... as I say, a lot of traffic. I mean, I would be coming a lot from the Glencar area, and what I would have traditionally done coming from the Glencar area is gone down the hill at De Valera Road, taking a left turn, go out the Remelton Road, hook up then with the road just beyond Ballyrain School, and get onto the roundabout that way. And that was a way of avoiding the towns, avoiding, say, the shopping centre roundabout, avoiding the traffic going out the Port Road. And a lot of people do that. Another caller just saying stigma is defined as a mark of distress. I've never heard anything bad about somebody who has passed away from suicide, just sadness. I wonder if by calling it a stigma, are we creating a stigma? Well, I certainly wouldn't like to call suicide a stigma. But it's one of those areas where the discussion and the language used is so important. One final thing I do want to say before we go. We were speaking earlier to Brian and to Mags about the impending 25th anniversary of Millennium Forum. It'll be celebrated in 2026, and really look forward to that. However, this year, And Green and Theatre in Letterkenny celebrates its 25th anniversary, and there is to be a special event in Angrenan in November. The date immediately escapes me. I think it's in around about the 25th, 26th of November. We can confirm that later. But in November in Angrenan Theatre, a celebration of the theatre's 25th anniversary. I'll be honoured to be playing a part in that, as will many people who share the stage. All local drama groups, panto societies, musical societies, all of us coming together to put on what's going to be hopefully a very memorable show indeed. Thank you so much to Donna Marie for producing and for taking your calls. John's up next around the Northwest. For myself, Donald Kavanagh, have a very good day.